back to A Girl, A Guy, and a Buffy podcast. I'm Charles.
And I'm Kate.
How are you, Kate?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little... We're going into a big topic, and so yeah. I'm a little like...
Well, one thing we should say that is our intention is for this episode and the next episode to essentially be a two-parter, and they're going to wrap up our first season. So we're following in the Buffy tradition of a two-parter season finale. So the topic of this first one is we're focusing on misogyny, but within that... patriarchy, sexism, and chauvinism.
And we just want to give a content warning too of these topics. Yes. Or if these things might be things that affect you or things that you are sensitive about, or possibly even trigger you, just be mindful of that. Make sure you're in a safe space.
Absolutely.
I think we're just going to dive right in, I think.
Yeah. As we've been saying, you know, this is going to be... it's a complicated topic. It's a messy topic just in general, but I think especially to the show, and a show that's so beloved to so many people. And if you, you know, you've been listening to our previous episodes, you know how much we love this show. So, you know, we do this, any kind of discussion, constructive criticism, with the perspective of a love for the show, but recognizing that, you know, some of the work that they did or the swings that they took may not have always had the outcomes or the impact that they may have wanted it to. Yeah.
So we understand that we are not the authorities on this. We don't have all the answers. We can't answer all of the questions. These are our opinions and our thoughts on it. I feel like they're fairly informed, but we realize that also everyone has a different experience and may see these things differently based on your own personal experience. And so we invite people to challenge us and to have a discussion about those things, because that's how we move the needle forward, is having discussions.
So to start off with, so that we're kind of doing a little bit of level setting, we're just going to do some definitions of the terminology so that we're kind of starting from the same place about what all these words mean. So I found a great resource from a website called Psych Central. So I'm just going to read from them about their definitions of misogyny, the difference between misogyny and chauvinism, the difference between misogyny and sexism. And so what they say is, misogyny isn't just hatred of women. It can also include aspects of prejudice, fear, and grandiosity. And it doesn't always involve men. Misogyny can look like many things. It can be blatant, like violence against women, or it can be less obvious, like subtly perpetuating inequality between men and women. Someone with misogynistic beliefs, for example, might take men at their word while dismissing or trivializing a woman with the same opinion. What is the difference between a misogynist and a chauvinist? Both concepts involve negative perceptions about women. Unlike behaviors of misogyny, however, chauvinism doesn't necessarily involve an underlying hatred or disgust of females. Chauvinism stems from a sense that males are superior to females and a belief women are naturally weaker, less intelligent, or otherwise less able in some capacity to men. Someone with chauvinistic beliefs may still enjoy being around women and may act protectively towards them out of the belief that they need someone to provide for them. What is the difference between a misogynist and a sexist? Misogyny can be an extreme form of sexism. These two terms aren't always interchangeable, however. Anyone can be a sexist if they discriminate against the opposite sex. Misogyny is hatred and discrimination specifically against females. Women can be as misogynistic as men, and a feeling of superiority toward other women, contempt for common female feminine behaviors, and male dominant ingrained beliefs can all contribute to female toward female misogyny. So that's breaking down misogyny and then chauvinism and sexism. The other definition I wanted to read through is patriarchy, which we have talked about in a previous episode, but I thought bringing in a fuller definition for this discussion would be helpful as well. So this definition comes from thoughtcode.com. Patriarchal describes a general structure in which men have power over women. Society is the entirety of relations of community. A patriarchal society consists of a male-dominated power structure throughout organized society and in individual relationships. Power is related to privilege. In a system in which men have more power than women, men have some level of privilege to which women are not entitled. So you can see all of those terms are very intertwined, and will, I'm sure, come up multiple times in our discussion. So, thoughts, Charles,
I mean,
on those definitions?
Or something that is so heavy-handed, for the actions of those things that are so heavy-handed, it is such a nuanced distinction between all of those things.
Yeah, that's a really good point to make.
It just, you know, the impact of misogyny and the patriarchy and sexism, I mean, are long lasting, and they're so, especially now, relevant and top of mind for, I think, people on both sides of this argument, on both sides of this, like people who are misogynists are trying to protect, you know, the patriarchy and all of that stuff. And people who are like, this is ridiculous, because the patriarchy hurts everyone, not just women. It also hurts men. The usage of it has to be, you know, is so nuanced, and it's so delicate about what these things are.
Right. Well, and I think also where mindsets are, you know, I think it's a spectrum, and the further you are along the spectrum, it's going to be harder to change someone's mind and get them to see that negative behavior and why they're behavior and their thinking is wrong and their treatment of women is wrong. You know, so that makes a difference as well.
Yeah, I mean, and like, just looking at Buffy, I mean, I think one of the sort of the biggest cases, or, you know, the easiest example of, you know, the patriarchy is the Watchers Council. Like, the Watchers Council is like, is the embodiment of patriarchy. You know, at its core, it's like, we are the people, and he says it in Checkpoint, like, the Watchers stay the same, and it's the Slayers that change. The women are the ones that change, and everything they do towards a Slayer, towards a woman, is designed to keep her in check. It's designed to keep her off balance. It's designed to use her as a tool for the patriarchy.
Yeah, absolutely. So our question for the episode is, it's a little bit of a longer one because this was, like we said, it's a little more complicated of a topic. Where is misogyny, patriarchy, and sexism used purposely in the show? And where does it just perpetuate those ideas unintentionally?
Quentin Travers, he's a misogynist. Like, he feels very misogynistic.
Quentin Travers is definitely, like, incredibly patriarchal. I think he's also just incredibly old-fashioned. He's presented as old-fashioned, old thinking. Whereas, you know, Giles being younger, he's more open to what Buffy brings to the table. And, you know, that makes a huge difference in her ability to be the incredible slayer that she is, because he supports her. You know, that show, the show is demonstrating to us what, if at first a girl, then a woman can do when she has the people in her life supporting her, whether that's men or women. But in this case, you know, since we are discussing specifically the ideas of patriarchy, misogyny, and sexism, it really shows you what she can do when you have a really incredible man who is not caught up in his own beliefs about women, who really supports her in the best way possible. I think their dynamics go back and forth a little bit more about, related around age and sort of that student teacher relationship, rather than anything related to, you know, patriarchy, sexism, or misogyny. So even though he's rebelled against the council a lot, it's not like he's tried to overthrow the council and what they do.
Right.
That was all Buffy. I mean, he supported her in it, but he was also fired by that point.
Right.
But whereas in season seven, you know, that big loss, I think, throws him, and then his deteriorating relationship with Buffy, who which personally I think is mostly through his own actions. His, you know, his decision to leave both the first time, what when she is dead before she's resurrected, and then certainly once she's resurrected, and then the way he gets on her during season seven, trying to train these girls and basically make her do things that as a solo slayer, she's not been trained to do. I always felt he became a little bit, he became patriarchal in that season, and she was rubbing up against him. And until she made the decision to turn on, activate all the slayers, that was like the first time. And he said, yes, that's a great idea. Cause she's like, he's like, if you want my opinion, she's like, I do. That's sort of the first time all season they're back to being connected again, really the first in two seasons. So,
So I would agree with what you said about Giles. I think he's someone who is possibly trying to find his way through patriarchy and trying to, without necessarily upholding it. But still having to exist within the limits, and especially having Buffy around as someone who shows him that there is a different way, and that, you know, how do you, you know, how do you find yourself in a world where you're like, oh, all the rules have changed now. Like, they don't, it doesn't have to be this way. So it's interesting. What are your thoughts on, like, I'm just curious about, like, the whole, if we're looking at the Slayers and in their role in all of this, like, I don't know why Kendra's, I guess we don't have enough information, really.
I mean, I think that's where some of the frustration with the show can come into play, where the make it up as you go along and not doing some of the universe building, and you just throw out these like hints, but it like you don't get the fuller picture of like what is the Slayer legacy, what is the tradition of how things are done, you know. Yeah, that's where like there's so many open-ended questions because we've gotten such little information.
Right.
Going back to our question, so we're kind of looking at where did those storylines work and to me move the story forward. And I know we want TV to somewhat reflect that or our storytelling, but to me there's like that fine line of where is it too much, where sometimes don't we want our storytelling to show a better society versus, but that's the way it is. Our storytelling, I think, can help advance society and treatment of people. So where is that line of it's too much versus it's telling an authentic story?
Right. And it gets complicated because depending on where you're coming from and how what your viewpoint is, it can be like two things can exist at the same time. Like it could also be, you know, it could be told for this reason, and it's also perpetuating the very thing that we're like, can we tell a different story because we're tired of seeing this story? Because how often do we need to see women raped, battered, and abused to know that women get raped, battered, and abused? Like, what's the solution? Let's stop living in the problem and start working for a solution.
Exactly.
Ted is a great example of this. Like, I feel like Ted is one of those episodes where it's like, this was a story that was specifically told from this viewpoint, and it was like the misogyny, the like the chauvinism, all of that stuff was very pointed and very deliberate because this was the story that we're telling.
Well, and it's also that the character was obviously in the wrong.
Right.
You know, the original creator himself and what he did and his mentality and thinking, and that he then passed along to each robot version of himself, assuming if there was more than one. So yeah, that distinction I think was very clear in that episode.
Right.
Other one I was going to say, I think it's really clear, and it's also an early kind of foreshadowing of what would start to happen as the internet developed and social media, but is iRobot Eugene. And it's basically like foreshadowing catfishing. I mean, it's one of the first, and I think that was a great example too of it being a moral panic without being like, Willow can never go on the internet again because, oh my God, there's so much stranger danger out there.
Everything Warren and the trio absolutely serve, you know, Warren is sort of the epitome, again, just sort of like the ultimate misogynist. Yes, he is a horrible, horrible human being.
Yeah, it, I 100% agree. I mean, I actually think that was one of the really good storylines. It rings even more true today than I think it did back then. Like Warren's character and even Jonathan and Andrew and their little boy behavior just feels so on point nowadays.
It really highlights what the mentality and the thought process of what a lot of men who exhibit misogynistic behavior, who act as misogynists and narcissists, are really thinking, and like how they get there. And it is fascinatingly disturbing.
Oh my God, incredibly. Well, and in doing research for this, I'm going to read one more thing, quote one more thing. So I was on the Anti-Defamation League's website, and they had a description about incels, which I keep hearing the word thrown around. So I wanted to like understand that better. And it actually, for those who don't know, it stands for involuntary celibates. And so these are some characteristics that the Anti-Defamation League's website listed to describe incels. Incels are heterosexual men who blame women and society for their lack of romantic success. A subset of the online misogynistic, quote unquote, manosphere that includes pickup artists and men's rights activists. Incels are known for their deep-seated pessimism and profound sense of grievance against women. The incel ideology is rooted in the belief that women have too much power in the sexual slash romantic sphere and ruin incels' lives by rejecting them. I mean, that is like Warren to a
That
T.
is the literal definition of Warren's character trait. Like it's exactly him. That sort of pops into me because we're talking about all these like really great examples of like this is clearly a point, but something that keeps popping into my head is the use of the word bitch, in language. How do you feel about that word, especially when, you know?
For me, it's context, what the situation is and what the intent is. For the most part, I personally don't tend to be bothered by it. Now, a good example of where it is, it has that like angry, offensive energy is like when Warren uses it. He says that to Buffy, and you can feel that intent behind it, and you're like, oh, okay, that's sort of really using it as his intention. And yeah, it's a good question.
And I
What do
and
you think?
well, you know, I'm sort of, gay guys, we throw it out, left and right, like people breathe air. So it's again sort of a contextual thing because Spike uses it a lot, and a lot of times when he says it,
Oh, played
sometimes
for humor.
it's played for humor, like out for a walk, bitch.
Okay.
Like, you
And I
know,
love that line. It makes
it's
me
a
laugh
great
every time.
line. It's funny. But he also, I mean, there's a lot of things that he does too that his lines are written for the humor, but he negs her so much. He
Oh my
spends,
God,
I mean,
yes.
season five, he just negs the bejesus out of her. Like everything is like, oh, you can't keep a man. Why? You're losing your looks, or you didn't give it up enough, or like the things that he says to her are off, like are terrible.
I think with the Spike character, and I'm not saying that he's right to do that. I think the difference between him and like other more misogynistic, chauvinistic, either characters or men in real life is his is coming from a place of insecurity and emotional vulnerability. It doesn't give him an excuse to do it, but I don't think it has the same. It's not coming from a hatred of women and a hatred of Buffy. It's like that's sort of the vamp side of him, but also the vampire side of him wanting to crush the soft, chewy human center of him that still lives on.
Is it possible to say, though, that a lot of that, fear of women and all of that comes from an insecure place in men, and that
Yeah, I think so, but I think actually Spike has a great appreciation of women. He leads he doesn't have actually like a true sense of self in a lot of ways, because he's always been led by like trying to get the woman. You know, first it was Cecily and then Drew. And I mean, he stayed with Drew for like 100 years while she constantly cheated on him, and he wanted to be monogamous, you know? And so, I mean, taking into the context that they're vampires and how they think of relationships and sex is in the show is not is portrayed as being different as what as humans may think of it. That being said, I just think he's coming from a different place. I don't think there's the hatred for women. I think there is a love of women. Because if it was, then he would do it to Dawn, he would do it to Joyce. You know, he does it in these like romantic relationships. I mean, he is so wrong in so many ways. I mean, you know, Harmony's herself is not a nice person or vampire, but he treats her terribly and she doesn't deserve that in
Like
that
he's
sense.
physically abusive to her.
Yeah,
Like he
he's
is,
physically and emotionally abusive to her. And then, you know, he's not even in it with her towards the end for the sex. He's fantasizing she's a, you know, Buffy.
Buffy, they do the role play thing with,
Right. And it's not like, oh, we're equal partners having fun role play. It's like, no, you're this substitute. I mean, she's their first version of the Buffy bot. You
basically.
know, basically. Yeah. So I think his is messed up. I'm not saying it's not. I just don't think it comes from a place of misogyny or sexism, or, you know, incel behavior. I think he's got his own twisted stuff, but it's not coming from there. That's my take on it. Do you see it differently?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because I mean, I do see it from that perspective, and I think that holds true. It's tricky. He's tricky because sometimes he's the sweet guy who does all of these really great things, and he definitely grows, but he and changes, and so he has this very redemptive arc. And I think it is done out of insecurity. I think it is done out of frustration. But I also think when you go back to that definition of incel, like where he's constantly being rejected by women, and so I think there's some anger that comes out with that. Especially like when Drusilla comes back, he has this whole rant about how frustrated he is about the feelings that he has, and why can't you? I don't understand why you can't love me. I don't understand why this is happening. And it's your fault because you cheated on, like, he's blaming everyone. Like, it's your fault because you cheated. And if you didn't cheat, I wouldn't be here. This wouldn't have happened to me. You wouldn't be able to touch me. I'm so, like, why? I'm messed up and it's all your fault.
I actually see a lot more chauvinism in Riley.
Yeah. For sure, for
Especially having gone,
sure.
like I said, gone back and rewatched, and you kind of see all the pieces in one lump sum versus like week to week, and you forget things. You know, he definitely has that much more of like from the beginning. You know, men are stronger. The men have to take care of the women. I don't think, you know, there's no hatred in there. He think he just has a very narrow-minded, old-fashioned mentality. Fully comes out when he cannot understand Buffy and her role as a slayer, and that headbutting, you know, comes to a head during their breakup. You know, that whole period.
I mean, he's from the beginning. Once, I mean, after Hush, and they find out, who each other really is, like that whole, he struggles the entire their entire relationship. He struggles with her power and with her duties and all of that stuff, and he doesn't quite get it, and he feels like, I think he feels threatened by it, and is very insecure by the whole thing, but he loves her,
Yeah,
so
he definitely loves her, but I mean, there is chauvinism throughout his behavior. And I honestly think from the start, I mean, when she tells him, "No, I don't want to date you," and he won't leave her alone and tells her she's stupid. I mean, to some degree, he's not wrong in that she probably is closing herself off. But at the same time, she's only just come out of a really big, often terrible relationship, and then she just thought she was about to get into another relationship, and the guy turned out to be a jackass and was a one night stand with Parker. So for her to say, no, I'm not ready to do this. And certainly with someone like you and your background, I don't want to date another monster hunter. He doesn't respect that.
Right. Right.
And he kind of like talks her into it. And I think that's part of that behavior. Like, I know what's best. And you should listen to me.
Right.
I'm not saying like there aren't parts of Riley that are not nice. And I definitely think he loves her, but I think he's also a bit obsessed with her. Because he's
saying more.
So if you think about that conversation he has with Xander, where he's like, you know, I love her, but she doesn't love me. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and then he was telling her at some point, I think this is during the breakup scene, like, my skin just buzzes around you. And I just feel so alive. And the way he talks about her, it just feels like he doesn't see her as like a person. He sees her as
what something, she does for him.
Yeah. Something to be put up on a pedestal. But as far as, you know, within this context of our topic, I definitely think he has elements of chauvinism in him.
Right. What about Angel?
I think there's a little bit of sexism in Angel, but I don't know if it's so much full on. Like, I think it's a combination of the age discrepancy, probably when he grew up. Because I certainly think he respects her as a slayer, but he does make a lot of decisions and without her input.
Right. Yeah, I think there's that's the sexism part of it, right?
Yeah.
In terms of who you are as a person, you are weaker than me, and I need to, because I know better, I need to make these decisions for you, which is not fair at all.
Right.
It also is hugely, I mean, that again, that relationship is problematic too, because it's weird and creepy because he is way, way older than she is. And there's a huge power dynamic there. So that, you know, I can't believe we fell for it, but we did.
I know.
We loved it.
As anybody else.
We loved it. And we totally fell for it.
Well, this is where like the messiness of the show, which I think is true to life, comes into play, because you have these messy characters and these messy storylines, but you have these actors who are so good at portraying the characters and portraying the emotions, so that you're like, you get caught up in that and you're like forgetting that she's 16 and he's 200 and whatever. And he was probably at least 18, if not older, when he was turned into a vampire.
Yeah,
I always assumed he was in his like early 20s, but
that's what I thought. Like,
so then even if they were, he was actually not a vampire in that age, he's still too old for her.
Right.
So you have, yeah, that power dynamic. Exactly.
Yeah. We just fell for it. We just don't, I mean, and they even those things of like, where she says, where when Willow and Oz are dating and she's like, well, he's a senior and I'm a sophomore, he's a little older than me, and she's like, please, my boyfriend had a bicentennial. like it's played for the laugh,
right?
And also ew.
Exactly. Ew.
So again, I think that's where those things where we sort of gloss over these ideas of misogyny and patriarchy, where it's okay for older men to seduce younger women and things like that, like where that age gap is okay.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And in that vein too, I mean, that's where, you know, Angel might be right in some of the reasoning for his decisions, but again, he makes them. He doesn't discuss them with her. I mean, in particular, their season 3 final breakup.
Yeah.
You know, at that point she's 18. They've been through a lot together. They're all fully right in that relationship can't go on, at least in the way it is currently. But that being said, you don't just be like, oh, I'm breaking up with you in the sewer because you were talking about prom. Like, you're dating an 18-year-old high schooler.
Right. You knew that going into it, buddy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot more because of high school. It was a lot easier to do the Monster of the Week episode, that I think you have a lot more of that in those earlier seasons. You know, we've already named a couple episodes, but then you also think about Beauty and the Beasts in season three with the abusive boyfriend who turns into like
Oh,
Jekyll and
right.
Hyde.
Yeah.
If you think about in the episode of Anne, where Buffy is a waitress and she can't do anything with her customers who are sexually harassing her, slapping her on the butt and saying, you know, calling her cutie or whatever.
Right.
And then you have when Buffy is given the drugs by Giles and helpless. And again, a bunch of older men are like coming onto her and she has to run to escape them.
Right.
She doesn't have the physical power now. So there was a lot of that kind of stuff that was used in those early seasons.
So are there instances where it just doesn't feel intentional, where it's like,
I think the biggest area where it's problematic and doesn't feel it moves the story along, I may be intentional, but I don't think it helps the story, is a lot of Xander's behavior, particularly in high school.
I was just gonna say the same
Yeah,
thing.
we're hitting the Xander thing. I know Xander is like, for some
There's
people, they love him, they think he's amazing, and other people are like, it sets their hair on fire. Like they think he's just the worst. And I think he's somewhere in between. I
Yeah.
mean, you know, he's a complex character. And, you know, what makes it more complex, because we hadn't gotten into this yet, but it's been said in multiple interviews by Joss Whedon himself and by other actors who've been interviewed from the show, the character that was most like Joss Whedon is Xander.
Right.
So then you factor in all the information that's come out about him since, and it's hard not to see Xander in an even more problematic light.
Right. And to draw those parallels is
And to
like,
draw those parallels,
yeah.
yeah. I mean, you know, those that has been said in multiple interviews. I'm
Yeah.
like you and I have talked about. We're not going to make assumptions based on info we do not have,
Right.
but we do know that, and so. There's a lot about Xander that how he behaves towards women in high school that's played for laughs. And now it's not funny. It
Right.
shouldn't have been funny then, but now watching it, I don't find that funny. The things
Right.
he says, the sexual innuendos, the, oh, did I say that out loud? You know, inappropriate thoughts.
Right. And like Buffy says, like we're not jumping to conclusions. Their conclusions
Right,
were
exactly. Yeah, I think Xander's biggest problem is his sense of entitlement, that he deserves the girls to be interested in him. I mean, that's a little bit of that incel behavior.
Right. And it's, and it is that boys will be boys mentality is
A
sort
hundred
of
percent.
what, is where they were going with that, and they allowed
Right.
that to happen.
Right.
And it just there are things now that I mean, yeah, he should have been doing before. I mean, one of the things that keeps popping to mind, there's several other examples for sure. But the thing, and I think this is one point maybe where we might disagree, is that like that scene, and so it's Buffy's birthday, and he's like, happy birthday, Buffy. I feel a birthday spanking coming on. And Jenny is like, you need to curb that thought immediately. Like, she's like, let's shut that down. Like, it is a little weird that you're like, hey, let me spank you in front. I mean, I know it's kind of like that's sort of the tradition, but especially in front of your teachers and,
Yeah, and you know, it's again, it's so much of it is context.
Right.
If Xander didn't have sexual romantic feelings for Buffy, and then also when he was possessed by hyena, didn't try to sexually assault her, and have that sort of there in the background, it might read different. If he was just like a sweet guy friend, or to be honest, it would change it if he was gay.
Yeah.
Like context changes it. There are things that friends can say to each other that don't come off as
Right.
inappropriate, gross. In this case, it does, and it is inappropriate and gross.
Yeah, and I think because everyone knows that he
Right.
Like, it's not a secret that he is crushing on Buffy. Like, he
Right.
makes no.
But then on the flip side, and we'll probably discuss this more in our second part, for the next episode. At the same time, when he has Amy do the spell on Cordelia and it all goes wrong, he steps up. I mean, he doesn't take advantage. I mean, granted, I don't think the show would have ever actually had him do that because that would have just taken the show in a whole different direction. But I suppose give some credit where credit's due
I
to a
mean, I guess
degree.
after, yeah, after the fact, after after the fact that he did something super creepy anyway, just to be
Right.
like,
But
hey, to
his
make
creepy
it the
intention was for something else.
right. It was
That
enough. It was a
wasn't
different creepy intention that
right.
turned out wrong, and so he was like,
Exactly.
"Well, I don't want to. This isn't what I wanted." But there was still creepy intention, and I think, but it, he, I think he does learn a lesson from that, and I think whenever he makes a mistake, he learns a lesson, and he
Agreed.
grows, and he changes.
Yeah, as far as like, to me, Xander's the biggest where it didn't work. It didn't feel as story driven. It felt humor driven. It was like, we just want to do it for the laugh. There was no emotional arc. There was no emotional journey. There was no like trying to get a character to another place, whether it was Xander or somebody else reacting to Xander. Yeah, those sides of him.
It also plays when in season seven when he has the dream about the
Oh,
two slayers who come to him, and
yes.
they're like, I've never been with a woman with a woman before. I've never been with a woman either. I've never been with a woman in front of you before. Like, it's like, what is this?
Oh my God, that was awful. Because it would have been bad enough that he has that dream and then wakes up, but it's worse because he's housing a bunch of the Slayers. So they're like right out there.
And then it like blows into this whole pillow fight, and then,
Yes.
and then when they
Again, it.
come wake him up, he has to like cover himself because,
Yeah. And again, did that do anything for the episode, for the story, for the characters, for the other characters? No.
It
It was
just
a.
reminded us that
Yes.
Xander is a man who likes young girls, and we've both done the research. Like, the age of consent in California is 18.
Yes, it was 18 back then. It is
18
still
back
18
and
today.
is still 18 today.
Yes.
So any of that stuff that happened,
Yeah.
prior to, doesn't really work because these young women can't give consent. So it's just, it makes it all very weird and creepy
Yeah.
and not okay. One of the biggest misogynists that we didn't talk about, and I can't believe we haven't talked
Oh.
about this, is our preacher man,
I knew where you were going with that one, Mr.
Nathan
Caleb.
Mr. Caleb, Nathan Fillion. That,
What are your thoughts on Caleb?
I mean, he again, like, I feel like this one is written so, I mean, I feel like it's written so well, and so, and is a great foil to the story that they're pushing towards the end to bring it, like, where they're going to bring in this guy who is like, women are weak. I am a strong man. I am powerful. I am being filled with the darkness. I am, like he says, and everything that he does, and how he treats the women, and how he is able to physically overpower, all of the potentials, and even Buffy. It's just, I mean, it is this great foil of like misogyny, this sexist, misogynistic, asshole,
Yeah.
basically.
Well, and especially too, because another great contrast in him versus Buffy and the potentials is he has borrowed power, whereas they have, I mean, they have gifted power, but it's gifted to them to use to protect the world versus his temporary power that he uses in such destructive ways.
And his power is like, their power is always with them. Like, they're the
Right,
Slayers,
right.
that Slayer line, that is always, that power exists within him.
Yeah.
He has to keep going back to be To be refilled and to replenish
Right.
his power,
Right.
in order to do that.
I do think, yeah, I do think his character and his storyline was done with complete purpose. And as you said, it was, to contrast against how the show ends and Buffy's decision to activate all the Slayers. As far as like storytelling goes, I kind of feel like he was too over the top. It's not problematic in the like storytelling about the him being like the ultimate example of misogyny as we go into sort of the ultimate example of defying the patriarchy and activating all the Slayers. But I wonder if I just think it makes it maybe less interesting as far as storytelling goes. Would a more subtle character have been more interesting and scary? Like he just had his craziness and like his borrowed brute strength. That's more a question on the quality of the storyline rather than, is it done well or not, as far as within the purpose of presenting a misogynistic character.
That's a good point. I mean, would another character serve the plot just
Yeah,
as
like a good
well?
example to contrast against that would be the mayor. Because the mayor is very sexist and patriarchal, but he did it in that like smiley, creepy, like, I'm your grandpa sort of way, but like,
It's interesting to see how those characters worked. I mean, I think they worked for their storylines. I mean, for sure. And I don't know if it,
yeah,
yeah.
it's two different storylines. Like I said, it's more about the storyline issue rather than and within the context of what did or didn't work for storylines that showed misogyny. But it is interesting to see the differences. And I feel like, from what I've heard other people talk about, I think there's much more love for how the mayor, the character of the mayor, and how he portrayed his evilness versus the over the top of Caleb. But again, that's more like preference.
And I think, I mean, too, when I think about the mayor, I mean, it's interesting because I don't necessarily think misogynist. I think sexist, maybe a
Yeah,
little
no, I would
bit.
agree. I would agree. Yeah.
And so where Caleb is feels much more like he is a
Oh, he's out and out
misogynist, like
misogynist.
he
Yeah,
is a
there's no.
misogynist. And so I think, so when you're going into this whole storyline of, hey, we're about to, basically activate to its fullest potential feminism and, a matriarchal society and about to change the world that way, making him sort of one of the last big obstacles to overcome felt right in the storytelling. There's a lot to talk about, and I think there's so much to explore.
Yeah, and there's a lot they did well and they got right as far as using the storytelling to get those points across, to show misogyny, to show sexism, to show chauvinism, but how there are ways to overcome that. I think they did it much more on a individualistic level versus any sort of systemic change, as we talked about in the feminism episode, until the very end. But that's probably a bit more true to life in a lot of ways too.
And I think probably one of the places where it misses the mark too, in that is that it doesn't showcase how misogyny hurts men and all of that, and the negative impacts that it does have on men. I mean, I guess if you want to look at, you can, I guess you can look at the trio in terms of that, because you can sort of see how, I mean, it's particularly with Jonathan. I think Jonathan is probably one where you might see how patriarchy and misogyny really hurt him, because he felt so isolated for so many things. He tried to like sh kill himself in the bell tower. He does, like, he casts a spell to make everyone like him. Like, he's really, really struggling to fit
Right.
into this patriarchal world. And it's really, but it doesn't, but it's more of a like nerdy bullies after school special sort of situation with him, and less so how patriarchy hurts him until we get to Warren. And then we see, like, well, this is hurting him because now it makes him somebody that we've never seen him before. Like, he's gone down this path of, trying to, from going from being wanting to be friends with Buffy to trying to kill her and trying to hurt her, until he sees, that they've gone too far and all of this stuff. So it becomes, I think he's the only one that I can see or that I can think of off the top of my head where we can see, like, oh, this is, the patriarchy and, misogyny. That's, it hurts. It's hurting this man in
Yeah.
particular.
I think you can see that in Xander too. There's a lot of his self-deprecating comments, particularly in the high school years, where like, "Oh, I'm not man enough," or "That just made me feel so unmanly," or because he has these societal beliefs about what it is to be a man, about standing up, being physically strong. And I think he kind of learns along the way that that's Does, A, that doesn't have to, there's not one definition of what it means to be a man. And that by being surrounded by these amazing women, he learns to let that go and become who he is and what his strengths are. I think he still has a lot of growing to do, but I do think that starts to happen along the way. But I think he's an example, particularly early on, of how these patriarchal, sexist beliefs about at least let's say in American society, because that's where the show is based, of what it is to be a boy and a man and not showing emotions or being physically strong or protecting the women. And that's not happening around him. So
What are your thoughts on the women of the show and, their examples of misogyny or their examples of sexism? Do you see that on the show?
Oh, that's a good question. I think in some of the characters, I think Maggie is a good example from Maggie Walsh, because she's in a patriarchal system. She's all about controlling and making the perfect weapon. So I don't know that she's misogynistic, but I do think she believes that that is the only way to be as a person, as a woman, and moving, I'm sure feeling that way to move forward in her career. Or maybe that's how she was to begin with, and it was she found the right career to fit her personality. I think you could say she's an example, because, yeah, how about you?
I mean, I kind of just thinking about, all the different characters, I think it's hard to say because I think some things are just written for, convenience of story.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I will say the other thing I did think about, yes, I would say slut language, that the girl, and a lot of the time it's the girls using it, be like, "Oh, I can't wear this. It's slutty," or, "Ugh, what, how trashy does she look?" Or, I'm not using the exact quotes, but it's that kind of language.
Yeah, like Cordelia uses it a lot.
A lot.
Early on, she uses that. I mean, Buffy talks about herself in that way sometimes,
Absolutely.
or even, and talks about faith that way, and
Yeah,
uses that.
exactly.
There's a lot of slut shaming that
Yes.
happens in there. I was just watching Crush, and like, and even in that, like, there's a moment, and it's very subtle, and it's something that I didn't notice. And I have to give a shout out to Boys Watching Buffy because, like, I was listening to that and I heard it and I was like, oh gosh, that's such a weird thing. Where she's telling Joyce and Willow about Spike being in love with her, and Joyce saying, like, Well, are you sure you didn't do anything to lead
Yeah.
him on? Did you give him any sort of like inkling or anything like that? And I was like, huh. Yeah, like because she doesn't. Like, in fact, she does everything to keep, you know, almost
Yes.
everything. I mean, she keeps him around because I think deep down she knows like he's harmless and also that she needs him on occasion, that he is a tool to be used
Yeah.
when convenient for her.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, that's a line that's like played for laughs.
Right.
It's not
Well, and
helpful.
yeah, and I don't like, I don't think even that line was not played for laughs. It's very sincere. Like Joyce is very sincere in that question. I think it's one of those things though that, you know, where it perpetuates this idea that like a woman did something to make a
Right.
man
Right.
act the way that he did.
Yeah.
No, men are just men act the way they do
Yeah.
because that's how they want to behave.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely delve into that much more in our second part,
Oh yeah.
of our two-parter finale, because that really falls a lot under rape culture as well, which is what,
Right.
so y'all get a preview. That is what our next episode will be about. So all of that is, I mean, there's a lot of overlap between misogyny and rape culture, so that's why we're probably be bringing up some of the same examples between the two episodes. But that, yeah, absolutely. All the slut language, the what did you do to make him do this? That's all definitely part of that, and that's where a good example of where the show could have helped to change perceptions.
Right.
Like, where it can be like, yeah, maybe that's not the real world, but how about we? I mean, this is a fantasy to begin with. Why can't we have some societal fantasy, where we don't use language like that, or we correct people,
Right.
so that there's a lesson learned? So those are some of the areas I wish that they had done that.
And they do it occasionally. They do it
Yeah,
occasionally with Xander, but
for sure.
and not, however, not enough, I
Yeah.
think, overall.
Yeah. And I think that's also not to say that we were right to be ignorant back then, but that is also where our societal perceptions have changed. I mean, all of that existed, and certainly people were calling it out back then, but not to the same level that we do nowadays, where there's tons of articles and people are tweeting about it. And, the Me Too movement certainly changed that, as we've mentioned before. So there's also our perception and our tolerance for that has changed.
Right, the collective
The
consciousness
collect.
has definitely made a
Yes,
shift.
exactly. Exactly. Well, I have something I wanted to, if we're ready to wrap up,
Yeah.
kind of end on a little more upbeat note.
Sure.
Okay.
Let's do
So this is, I'm going to
that.
do, y'all are probably sick of this, but I'm going to do one more quote, just because I really love it. It's from an opinion piece by Washington Post columnist Alyssa Rosenberg. And she's a TV writer, and the title of the article is "The Villains on Buffy the Vampire Slayer Showed Just How Pervasive Misogyny Can Be." So you can see that the overall article tied in to our discussion. So I just thought this quote from there was kind of a nice way to show what made Buffy the character so special. And so this is from the article. "Part of what makes Buffy Summers, parentheses Sarah Michelle Gellar, herself such an important character is her unique synthesis of power and personality, and the ways in which her frivolity and femininity coexist with her embrace of her destiny and her development as an ethical thinker and leader. Buffy and her friends represent some of the ways women find ways to wield power and to pursue fulfilling personal lives."
I
I just
love
thought that was
that.
a great quote. Yeah.
I love that.
Right?
That's great.
I think that's a great way to show what the show did well in those, in taking on those big concepts.
Yeah, so as we are wrapping up our season and we're, you know, exploring these ideas, you know, I'm curious to hear what other people are thinking about, you know, characters and misogynistic characters, chauvinist characters, sexist characters. who are the ones that stand out to you? Who was, you know, who did we miss? Who did we not
Yeah.
talk about?
Where did
Here's
it
a,
work? Where did it not work?
yeah, all of those things. We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely.
So thank you all so much for joining us this week.
Yes, thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. We definitely want to hear your thoughts. If you want to send us an email with your thoughts, questions, concern, you can email us at abuffypodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Facebook and Instagram at a Buffy Podcast. And if you like what you hear, please like and subscribe and download our podcast. We would thoroughly love it. And make sure to leave us a review, and you know, send us some stars and some love.
Yeah, let us know what you think.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.